And a very good afternoon to you. Welcome aboard this, the lunchtime social debate here on the Mid-Morning Mix here with me, Andy Knight, and joined in the studio, as always, of course, by the Baroness and Lord Philby. Yes, Kim and Dave are here. Very good afternoon to you guys.
Good afternoon.
Lovely to see you. Thank you for joining me. And how are you? Are you well?
Yeah, we're great.
Are you?
Looking forward to this.
I'll get my coat.
No, you're the only one that can work the controls.
There's steam coming out of our ears. We're going to have a lively one today, I can tell. We've already had some people in touch, but this is the time to do so. Between now and 1 o'clock, we'll be with you talking about all things local, national, light-hearted and serious. Anything that takes our fancy, and a few topics to kick about here in the studio with Kim and Dave. And your good selves, do get in touch. Have your say as well. You can do all the usual means by email, studio@vectisradio.com. You can tweet at Vectis Radio. You can Facebook us as well, facebook.com/Vectis Radio. Or, of course, if you actually want to come on air and put your point of view, you're very, very welcome to do so. That's why we are here. And you can do so on the usual number, the code 01983. Of course, the number in the studio, 240666. 240666 is the number. Now, I'm just going to throw a couple of bits and pieces out there that we might talk about. The Isle of Wight Day coming up next weekend, of course. And we have what I'm calling Bunting Gate. Bunting Gate going on at the moment. Local town and parish councils at loggerheads with the Isle of Wight Council and Island Road.
So we might have a surprise.
Bunting Gate might be a topic. Two MPs for the Isle of Wight, two for the price of one. What do you reckon? MPs for the Isle of Wight, that might be worth thinking about. We've got this new thing. Now, Kim, I know that you might have something to say on this a little bit later, but this traffic light system for nutritional information on food apparently may become mandatory, that manufacturers have to indicate to us very, very clearly indeed, using the traffic light system, what the food contains and whether it's any good for us or not. And on a similar associated subject, I just read a report recently that said that childhood obesity or overweight, certainly here on the island, is above the national average. That is a very concerning statistic, I think, and I wonder what we need to do about that. I've also had a call already from a little earlier than usual from Nick in Essex. Very good afternoon to you, Nick. And he is concerned about fly tipping. Obviously not just in Essex, it's a common problem right across the country and indeed here on the island, and I wonder what can be done.
People are fly tipping in my skip.
Well, that is actually technically fly tipping as well, isn't it?
It is indeed.
So where should we start? I know, Dave, that you were having a look at something. If something I mentioned on my show, I think it was last Friday on the Mid-Morning Show, just to start off with this, that the Guggenheim Museum in New York City, where else but America, an installation actually in a restroom in full functioning plumbed order is a solid, I repeat solid, not plated, solid 18-carat gold loo, which is there to be used. But the question, is it art?
I don't know. I mean, it does beg the question, and you're supposed to go and use it. I mean, what are the privacy implications of this? I mean, I thought it was a display in the middle of a room, you know. The only thing I was thinking was whether you actually sit. Whether you're sitting there looking at art.
Brings a whole new meaning to the term installation.
Absolutely. I mean, it doesn't say there, and certainly the picture doesn't indicate that it's in
it is actually in a restroom, I believe. But I mean, what I would worry about if I was a security guard there, if you saw someone say, excuse me mate, where are the loos? They wouldn't say it like that in New York City, but yeah, where are the loos, and he carries a great big bag of tools with wrenches and stuff in there. And a slightly bigger bag when he's coming out.
I think it's obscene. I think for the money that obviously cost, they could have spent the money a lot more wisely.
But it's art.
It's not art.
It's art on display. So, I mean, whatever it costs is nothing
it's
to do with the rest of us.
It's in a restroom.
Well, yeah. All right. Yeah. But, I mean, it does beg the question, I mean, the age-old question, the one that entertains dinner parties across the
chicken
land.
Chicken and egg?
Yeah, I mean, is it art? You know, when the artist says it's art, and if you say it's not, are you a Philistine? Are you a heathen?
Yeah.
Does it have to be painted? I mean, you know, how far do you take it? I mean, is it actually art if the artist says it's art? I mean, like, you know, the old pile of bricks in the Tate years ago, if you
and
remember.
Then coming from the other side of the field, it's... If the world's gold reserves can be put into, is it two or three Olympic-sized swimming pools?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
How much is a solid gold loo a percentage of the world's gold supply. I mean,
a significant percentage, you would think. You
know. Could supply a swimming pool for West White, couldn't it?
But you see, I mean, people will spend... I mean, you know, you were saying about the cost of the thing, and whether it's art or not, is almost academic, because, I mean, quite often I report on, you know, like rare paintings or pieces of art, works of art that are auctioned at some of the major international auction houses, and they go for tens and hundreds of millions of pounds and dollars and so on, and you sort of think, well... Yeah, I mean, I know you're not saying it, I am, but, I mean, people spending that much money on something to hang on the wall, or probably not, probably put in a vault because it's too valuable to hang
their
wall.
That's the worst thing.
Is that money well spent, or do we have any right to say, oi, can't you give us that money to, you know, pay for social
it's
services?
It's subjective, though, isn't it? Because what you think is art, I may not think is art, et cetera, et cetera.
Of course.
I personally think if it's a toilet and it's in a restroom, then that's not art. It's a functional thing.
That's right.
And, you know, it's not on display,
I mean, I wouldn't
therefore.
Like to, I mean, it, I don't know if... It is all apparently plumbed in, so presumably is. I'm going to use the word interactive to be polite.
Interactive.
It's a bit like
interactive
this,
art. I
it's
think.
Like Tracy Emin's bed. You
That's
know,
right.
that was hideous.
But I mean, yeah. Well, yeah, you say it's exactly the point, and you know, you are called a philistine, not you personally, but I mean, I would,
am.
Oh, we
well,
are.
You know, but if you say an unmade bed in an art gallery is not art, and someone else who's terribly high flown says, well, it's in an art gallery and it's by an artist, so it's quite clearly art, and probably sell for sort of, you know, 2.5 million or something. But we've all got unmade beds, but they're not in art galleries. So,
no.
You know, when does it become art? Just because somebody says so, or because somebody puts a silly price tag on it, or
yeah,
because
more likely, I think.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't know. I think you're right. I think it only becomes art. Somebody comes along and goes, yeah, that's worth about $1 million, darling.
Mm.
And they stick a price tag on it, and then suddenly everybody wants it. Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, some things are only worth what people will pay for them, but
everything's
but
only worth
gold
what people
loo
pay for it.
Actually has a weight value.
Mm.
Whereas
does,
a,
yeah.
whereas an unmade bed doesn't.
I mean, the actual, you know, price per gram of the gold, yep. I don't know how, I didn't actually see how much it cost, actually.
The article I read didn't say, no.
There's
was
probably some Middle Eastern prince, though, that's got one of those, actually is a functioning toilet in his palace.
Well, yeah, but they, but that's not for art, is it? Or is it? Is well, has this sort of...
No, I think that's because it's...
A prince who can afford it, maybe it is.
Because he can.
Or is it just a statement? Yeah, I mean,
he
is
can,
it just a statement?
Well, it is, because probably his uncle in the next palace down... Has only
got
half a one,
yes.
Or
or
he's only got three.
A solid silver urinal.
Absolutely. Do you know what? Took the words out of my mouth then. I was
getting
building,
silly.
I was building up to the gents' urinal.
Yeah, move on. Art for art's sake.
Art, yeah, careful.
Art for art's sake. Da, 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 da.
We go. Just to round off on this particular topic, Nick's just been in touch here. Thanks for that, Nick. He's saying that his nipper Alex's bedroom is a complete work of art.
Yeah, much like someone else's.
And I want to see what the inside of Denzel's spacecraft looks like when he comes down. I mean, how
I
many years? 10 years?
Yeah, I was going to say, you probably only want to see it. You probably wouldn't
well,
want to smell
right.
it.
But that's got to be a work of art.
Right, let's move on.
Yes,
Bunting,
seriously.
Buntinggate.
Oh, yes.
Buntinggate. Now, Isle of Wight Day coming up, which I think in principle when it was postulated, when somebody came up with it, I think the idea is a nice idea. I don't see anything wrong with it at all.
No, nothing at all.
I don't know how coordinated, how joined up the thinking's been in terms of getting it off the ground. I mean, it's next weekend, and I mean, there is some stuff about it on social media, but there's not a huge amount going on. So that's partly an issue there. But as I say, Buntinggate has hit the headlines more than the actual projected day of celebrating the island, which I think is a tremendous idea. But particularly down in Lake there, Island Roads and local town and parish councils are at loggerheads because of this bunting freely displayed all around
Absolutely.
The town. And I understand that the claim is that local councillors, you'll love this, Dave, hadn't carried out a risk assessment
yes.
on putting the bunting up. I knew that would get you going.
Absolutely.
The temperature's rising in here already. So, I mean... health and safety, risk assessments in order to hang bunting to celebrate the Isle of Wight. Is this just ridiculous or what?
Absolutely. As a Totland Parish Councillor,
yeah.
I've got to say that I don't remember us doing risk assessments apart from it's, you know, you do it at your own risk. You know, there will be a disclaimer there that you do it at your own risk.
Mm.
I only... very briefly glimpsed at it because I just thought it was a bit of hot air from the press about who was arguing with it. But it's was I not was I not mistaken that I think it's Island Roads or one of the organisations on the island has complained that it's obscuring views and it's could Island actually
roads.
Come off
road signs and yeah. I mean they have yep. have suggested that the risk assessments either weren't done or weren't done correctly, and that
possibly, yeah.
road safety would be compromised by bunting that A, either wasn't secured properly, or B, was in danger of obscuring road signs. Now, I can understand that to an extent, but I think to take it to the level where it's become more important than the day itself as a headline in the papers...
Well, just very, very good publicity is all I'm going to say.
Are you telling me, seriously, the pair of you, that for every street party we've held whenever there's been a celebration... that people have done a risk assessment and gone out there with their tape measures or whatever it is, because I don't believe you, if that's what you're telling me.
I think that's a good point. No,
I mean, I you know, when has point. It been a problem before? You think how many times we have carnivals, we have street parties, we have all these things, and all of a sudden, they've done it wrong in Lake.
Well, you two will remember more than most when you had the pub there with the Olympic torch going
absolutely.
Past.
Absolutely. And look at the bunting that was flying about then.
Absolutely.
But you didn't get all this rubbish. No. I mean, is it...
You
is
didn't
it,
do a risk assessment, did you?
I certainly didn't. I couldn't get out there. It was 2,000
come along, Andy.
People
there was at least two of us sat at the bar one night with a pint. I think you were there, probably with me.
Yeah,
probably
blessing
Tony.
Doodle.
Probably Tony Coway as well. We probably came up with
the back of a beer mat. That was.
That's
I
right.
remember it well.
Yeah,
that's
but
right.
and that's what that we did. Probably got thrown onto the fire.
It
we didn't.
Did.
We didn't. Yeah.
Yeah, when we ran out of beer. But anyway, that we digress, guys. We digress. Those are lovely past times.
So. Health and safety, risk assessments for bunting. I mean, is it really that
common sense.
Critical?
Well, common sense should
But is
prevail.
That not the case with risk assessments and health and safety generally? Are we over nanny stated?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we are.
Completely.
I mean,
is this just another symptom of the same problem?
Oh, yeah, it is. I mean, I can't... Well, I think people have taken it to the nth degree to preserve life and safety of people. It's not actually it's not the other people's responsibility. Surely it's our own responsibility.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? I mean,
and we're having that taken away.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, we no longer accept responsibility for our own actions. You know, it's the old, it's been going for a long time. I mean, the old going back 40, 50 years, the ambulance chasers, as
absolutely.
They used to be called, you know, the solicitors will say, have you been, you know, injured in an accident?
Oh,
it wasn't
still
your fault.
That.
Still, well, it's still going on now. But, I mean, people sort of think, well, the nanny state will look after me, health and safety will look after me, and if they don't, I'll sue them.
Exactly, and we are. We're becoming that kind of
irresponsible.
Culture, which is why, I guess, Island Roads and everybody else have got their, you know, they're upset about it, because, quite honestly, they probably are worried that they will be sued or something, and it will be their responsibility.
So it's kind of a filter-down effect because of the sort of nature of the society and the health assessments and risk assessments and health and safety that trickles down to that level, that perhaps Island Roads are, as you say, simply covering their own backs because there's people above them who will say, well, we're going to come down on you like a ton of bricks if somebody runs into a...
Or we're going to sue you. I think it is. We're becoming that kind of litigation culture, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. Well,
which
it has been
good.
For a long time, exactly. But I don't know. I mean, it seems strange. I mean, talking of you know, risk assessments and health and safety, and you gave some other very good examples. But, you know, bunting for this particular day, there must be more pressing needs that health and safety ought to be addressing.
So.
I mean,
yes, absolutely.
You'd have thought. I mean, potholes in the roads, for
a start. I was going to say, you're getting onto mine now, the beef where, you know... Just drive around Shalfleet and off to Porchfield, and you get a bit of road that's been done, and then another stretch that hasn't been done that's got 20, 30 potholes in it, you know, and your suspension disappears.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't they just do the whole stretch in one go?
Yeah.
I mean, that's madness. You know,
well, it's this kind of piecemeal approach, isn't it? I suppose they would say that minimising the disruption locally as far as they can. I don't know. That's probably the argument doing stretch at a time sort of thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, in terms of health and safety and the resources and, you know, there must be people involved in the town and parish councils, the Isle of Wight Council and Island Roads who are currently engaged in this bunting gate, wasting... To
time.
My mind, their time and resources
absolutely right.
dealing with something when there are far more pressing issues.
Well,
if you're
going
to be health and safety mad, at least focus on things that are important.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely
right. I mean, the island's council is in a parlous state, we're led to believe, and you know, the services aren't going to be able to be continued. And all we're talking about is whether you can fly a bit of bunting for Isle of Wight Day. I mean, that just doesn't.
Sounds like sabotage to me. Well, ooh, did I say that?
I mean,
or free publicity.
I mean, yes, publicity. As you say, it does raise the issue of, you know, any publicity is good publicity. Absolutely. So, you know, maybe. Perhaps we shouldn't be complaining about it. Perhaps it's actually raising the profile of the event in some kind of left field sort of way, perhaps. But anyway, are you going planning to celebrate on Saturday?
I'm doing a car boot sale.
Which is run by Tottenham Parish Council under the guise of Isle of Wight Day.
Whereabouts is that happening?
On Colwell Common.
All right.
On Saturday morning.
Excellent. And,
from 8:30.
Yes, that's right.
Are you selling sort of bundles of used bunting by any chance?
We'll have some stretched around our table.
I won't get my knitted bunting in time, I don't think.
That's right.
Knitted bunting. Yeah, that's an idea, actually.
I mean, yeah, the actual Isle of Wight Day is a grand idea.
Yes.
And it's kind of, I suppose this year is first one, let's see what actually happens. And the people are doing all sorts of different events for it in one way or another.
Mm.
That's out west. That's one of the events that we're
holding. Oh, well,
we wish you
luck with that, Dave, from the Tottenham Parish Council. Congrats to that. Fingers crossed for the weather and should be excellent. So a car boot sale on Colwell Common. Starting at what time, Dave?
8:30 for the traders, 9:30
for the buyers,
the general public.
All right, brilliant.
You know, that's everybody else.
Everyone else. All right, we're going to move on and come back after these with some other topics to discuss. But just a reminder, you can get in touch with us here. And the easiest way is just to pick up the old phone. And 01983 240 666 240666 will bring you into the studio here. And you can join the discussion. We've got plenty more to talk about in the remainder of this lunchtime social debate hour, right up till 1 o'clock. So do join us and let us know what you think about all this nonsense, one way or t'other. We'd love to hear from you.
The Lunchtime Social Debate is sponsored by jobs on the isleofwight.co.uk. If you're looking for work or if you're looking for staff, please call Jobs on the Isle of Wight on 01983 564 880.
This is Vectis Radio.
Putting the community back into local radio.
The loss of a loved one through bereavement is one of the hardest and most painful things we have to go through in life. It's a great help and comfort when someone can sit down with you and talk you through the kind of service you would like to mark the passing of your friend or relative, and then on the day deliver a warm and positive ceremony with his or her life at the heart of it all. My name's Jonathan Skeet, and I'm an independent funeral celebrant. For an informal chat with no obligation whatsoever about how I can help you in this crisis moment, call me on 01983 868607. That's 01983 868607. Or ask your funeral director.
Vectis Radio is a community radio station based in the heart of Newport. It currently helps youngsters between the ages of 11 and 19 and up to 26 with additional needs. Next year we're going FM, and in order to continue the good work that we carry out within the community, we need to raise funds for the FM equipment. To do so, we are putting on a number of fundraising gigs, the first of which is on November the 18th. It's at the Riverside Centre, it's a Friday, and it features the local band All Washed Up. Plus special guests, a raffle. It promises to be a really fun night. Tickets are just £5 and you can get them from Vectis Radio. Help us to help the community and be a part of our FM history.
What the hell do you want?
Please, sir, I don't know how to put together a radio jingle, and I'm ever so interested in radio broadcasting.
Sit down, maggot, and watch what I do. Read this into the microphone.
This is the Vectis Radio Breakfast Show.
Now watch what happens when I put these effects on.
The time is just after 8, and this is the Vectis Radio Breakfast Show.
Well, Governor, no kidding. You can do all that just from the skills you learn on the 4P project.
That and so much more.
Wow, I can't believe this is a free course. I must be in heaven.
Heaven's not as good as this, kid. Now get out of my sight.
To find out more, email me, ian.mac@vectisradio.com, and you could be the next big noise in radio.
Hello, everybody. My name is Verka Sirdyuchka.
Whoa, wait a minute. What was that? That was not dance music. This is dance music.
It's Dazzy D, just reminding you that if you love dance music, then please join me every Saturday from 7 p.m. right here on Vectus Radio with The Mashup, bringing you some quality, fresh tracks, classic floor fillers, the UK dance chart top 10 lowdown, and the odd masher here and there. If you like your dance tracks, then don't forget to join me from 7 on Saturday. It's The Mashup.
Stay social and get in touch. It's /Vectus Radio on Facebook. The World Wide Web never felt so local.
The Lunchtime Social Debate is sponsored by Jobs on the isleofwight.co.uk. If you're looking for work or if you're looking for staff, please call Jobs on the Isle of Wight on 01983 564 880.
And you're back. And you're back in the studio with us. That's Kim and Dave, the Baroness and Lord Philby, and myself, Andy Knight, here on the Lunchtime Social Debate this Monday afternoon with you through until 1 o'clock. Don't forget, you can get involved on the studio number, and that's 01983 240666. So what are we going to talk about now? Well, I'd like to just bring this topic up here. A couple of sort of, I think, related items in some ways, maybe a little bit indirect, but this idea that traffic light nutritional information on food. Now, that's not new. We know that in terms of the display on food packaging to give an idea on the amount of good, bad or otherwise of nutrition in its breakdown on food packets, so that we know a little bit more about what we're buying and whether it's any good for our health. But apparently there are moves afoot to make this traffic light labelling mandatory. In other words, all food packaging will have to carry it. I wonder what we think about that. And then associated with that, I was reading and was quite shocked when I read this particular sentence. I'm just going to quote you from a report that came out last week. 4 to 5 year old children here on the island, nearly a quarter of island children, are overweight compared to a fifth nationally for the same age group. I mean, that's a significant number of young children there at a very young age, and significantly higher than the national average, whatever that is, good, bad or otherwise. But both those things interesting, something of a concern, maybe related in some ways. Now, Kim, I know as a very keen nutritionist that you have views on the traffic light system.
I do. I think anything that makes it simpler for people to understand that if it's red, it's going to be very bad for you, or it will be, have, it's something maybe not to be eaten regularly. Obviously amber is, yeah, okay, you can add it in a little bit, and green obviously is very, very good for you and you can eat as much as you like. It comes back down to the alkaline way of eating, which is something I do subscribe to. I actually, some years ago, was involved with a slimming organisation, I won't say which one, and the prognosis then for the children of this earth was that in 10 years' time, so that would be 8 years' time now, most children will be heavier than adults. We will outlive our children, is basically what it said.
Really?
Because they are becoming obese. And I think you can put that down to a number of things. One, to take it right back to basics, people are not taught to cook from scratch. B, they don't get the action that we had as children. I mean, certainly our generation, guys. Put myself with you two now. We actually got out more, we cycled, we walked, we ran, we did. And I think there's fear. We all live in this element of fear for our youngsters, and it's not surprising. I understand that too. I think there's so many things involved in this, it's hard to pick one particular thing.
And you're absolutely right, and you've highlighted a lot of very, very important issues there, and I think you've done that really concisely. But I mean, if I go back to an earlier life of mine when I was a teacher, I mean, I don't think it's down to education, because the young people in schools for 20 or 30 years have been taught about nutrition. Now, I accept, and I think your point was well made there about the, we talked about this I think before on a different day, but about the fact that home economics, as it used to be called, doesn't really happen now. Okay, there's a little bit of cooking done as part of a project in sort of the afternoon now and again in schools once or twice a term, but it's not a weekly subject on the timetable for all sorts of reasons which we won't get into here. But in terms of educating children about healthy eating, that has been going on, and I can recall going back 25 years, and it was built into the curriculum, and you had to bash away at it.
But it also comes from home.
Well, that's where I was going with this.
This is where the economic situation comes in, because people are short of money, and they will go to the cut price stores. And again, I'm not going to mention any in particular, but my maxim in life is, if it's 99p, what's in it? Because you can get your life, there's a lot of synthetic in it.
Okay, well, look, are we saying that the critical factor in all of this in terms of choice of food, now, as I say, I don't think you can blame, not that we are, but I think education does as much as it can from a very young age to try and involve children in making decisions about their diet. But as you rightly point out, the majority of it, like their behaviour, like a lot of other things, will come from home. And that will already be in place even before they start school in terms of what they eat for the first few years of their young lives. But then we come to the issue of cost. Now, in these times of austerity, we're talking, you know, everyone feeling the pinch, naturally. But why is it that healthy food isn't cheaper than unhealthy food?
Well, it depends where you shop. And the thing is, I think because of time constraints, because nine times out of ten, I don't know, but I presume that both parents work for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're looking at a one-stop shop. Most mm-hmm. people want to go and do a one-stop shop.
Yeah, yeah.
I am very privileged because I haven't got a lot on. I'm not doing a one-stop shop. I actually shop about.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other day, I found a kilogram of carrots, organic carrots, for 80p.
Wow.
Now, that was not a cut-down. That was a price.
That was a regular price.
Mm. And same for mushrooms. They were the dark cap mushrooms. £1.
Mm.
Organic.
Mm.
But you have to look for it. Now, it is difficult because I know not everybody's got that amount of time and they'll just go and they'll collect things. There are, again, I don't say that everybody should be vegetarian, but if you put more vegetables in your diet, you're going to eat better, you're going to eat good quality, and you are actually going to eat cheaper than keep buying cuts of meat.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that's got out of control is portions. Portion control gone way out the window.
Mm.
And when you look at, if you eat out, I can remember sometime when it changed. You used to go out and you'd have normal portions that you'd have at home.
Mm.
But suddenly the trend was to fill a 10 or 12 inch plate and not just fill it but mount it as well. So you'd have a huge jacket potato which probably weighed, I don't know, 1.5 pounds, probably more, topped up with a filling and okay, a bit of salad on the side. But it's enormous, and the portions, I mean, people need to know, and this is true, your stomach is about the size of the palm of your hand cupped.
Mm-hmm.
So an ideal portion control on a plate is actually two hands cupped.
Okay.
And if you can eat that amount, that is all you should need. And you can cut your chicken, your fish, your meat down to fit in to the palms of your hand.
Mm-hmm.
And we would all be a lot healthier. We would, and that comes back to taking responsibility instead of the health and safety risks.
That's fascinating and very, very helpful advice as well there. Thanks for that, Kim. But, I mean, the other aspect, of course, is that we are a snacking culture.
We are.
And that, I think, is as much perhaps to blame, is it? I mean, I'm just throwing that out there.
I think not everybody's aware of what sugar. Oh, sorry, I'm back to my favourite subjects, aren't I? Sugar.
It's all part of it.
Well, only because they've been blaming, you mustn't eat fat and you mustn't eat this and you mustn't eat that. Well, now they're actually drawing from a book that came out in 1974, which was called Pure, White and Deadly. And now the health people are saying, oh, actually, it's not the fats that are the naughty things, it's the sugars and it's the carbohydrates and it's the fact that you're eating too much. But we've got into the groove. You're in a petrol station, you feel a bit of a snack coming on, you grab a bar of chocolate and pay for your petrol.
Do you think, though, that, I mean, I'm always, I mean, on my show, as you know, and I always have done for a long time now, but I'm always interested to see scientific reports that come out.
Absolutely.
And some of them I find them hysterically funny, but, you know, a lot of them are interesting and do provide information that we do need to know. But it seems to me, I mean, even if you just take any slice of time, like for the past 5 years, that you get a report that comes out 1 week saying that that's bad for you, and then the next week they say, no, actually, in moderation, that's good, it's this that's bad for you. Are people just fed up with the whole thing and confused and just say, I'm eating I'm hungry and I'll have what I like?
They're eating, but they're not necessarily hungry. I'm sorry, I don't
believe. But are they confused?
Very confused.
Do you think this traffic light system, if it were mandatory, would solve that?
I hope, well, I don't know if it will solve it. I hope it will. I hope that people understand the message behind it.
Mm.
But I think there is a lot of confusion out there. I think there's confusion out there because exactly what you've just said. 1 week red wine's good for you, the next week it's not. 1 week, you know, I happen to have read a lot about the sugar issue, and I do believe that, because it's the only thing, the one key thing they find in the American diet is the addition of corn syrup in practically everything. And when you think that the obesity is a huge problem over there, and it obviously is spreading over here, because we are doing the same thing. Low fat, okay, you buy low fat stuff in an effort to lose weight, but what they do, they plug sugar in it to make it taste. Whereas if you had a smaller portion of the real thing, you'd be doing yourself a far greater favour.
And you're going to get a more balance.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It is about balance, and I do think there's a lot of confusion. And going back to schools, I know, I understand the curriculum deals with nutrition, but it's no good talking about nutrition if they can't see it. And if they were to learn to cook from scratch, because that's where it all goes wrong. I mean, I could knock up a really good, nutritious meal in less than 30 minutes... instead of going in, buying a convenience meal and sticking it in the oven for 30 minutes. And I'd much rather know what's in my pasta sauce.
And you would know what was in it. That's the critical thing, isn't it, what you're saying?
You know what's in it.
I mean, Dave, you're nodding there because, I mean, as a cook yourself, I mean, it's knowing what's going into your food. If you prepare it, and I know it comes back to the, well, you know, busy lives, as Kim was saying, you know, both parents working, kids doing this, that and the other, they want to get on their Xbox instead of another point that you may get out on your bike or playing football in the back garden, which exercise is an important element as well. But I mean, you're nodding as a cook, and cooking something which is nutritional has just gone out of fashion.
People have lost the habit. They they want everything out of a packet. They they're say this eat on the go that, you know, you see people wandering around with or running around with cans of drink and bars of chocolate and sandwiches and whatever. I mean, that's not actually, you know, that's not a meal. They're not sitting down and eating it properly. They're not digesting it. They're just adding it to their being.
And you've made a key point there as well. They're not sitting down. I mean, a lot of that has been lost over time, and part of the problem also is that I understand that lunch breaks for working people have become even shorter. I mean, in my day, you got your hour, you had your hour, then it went to 45 minutes, I think, just as I was coming out. But I understand now, you know, you're kind of encouraged 30 minutes no max, and you eat at your desk. Well, how on earth are you digesting and understanding what you're putting in your tummy? You know, you can't actually do that, I don't think. I mean, a meal has to be a conscious eating.
What you're highlighting, both of you here, very cleverly, I think, is that you've got two ends, two opposite, opposing views of the same argument. And you've got, you know, the government saying, oh, we've got to, you know, wagging their fingers, and we've got to do something about the health of the nation. We're responsible for the health of the nation, and hence this traffic light, mandatory traffic light labelling system that's been talked about for nutrition in food. And then at the other end, you've got individuals, parents, families, or whatever, who are saying, I'm too busy, I haven't got the money, and then again, perhaps, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but again, going back to an earlier discussion we had, not taking responsibility for that, they're setting an example, they're role models to the, for their children. The schools do what they can, but most of it is going to come from home in terms of role modelling.
I'm afraid it does. And I think also, last bit on my soapbox, I promise, it's about being a parent and not a child's friend. I'm sorry, this is an argument I actually have with my own kids. You can't be their friend. You are their parent, and you tell them what's good for them to eat.
Are you suggesting, and I mean, you've come back on this, but are you suggesting that parents, because a lot of kids seem to, I don't know if it's more or less, I've never seen a report on this, but because they're such fussy eaters, they say, well, the only way I can get them to eat is to have, you know, baked beans on toast.
Well, baked beans are good. Baked beans are good for you. But, you know, couple that with chicken nuggets, which we all know are recycled bits of nasty. It is, it's giving in, and I'm afraid you shouldn't really give in. I know it's hard, and of course it comes back to the work-life balance. If you're busy, you've got a child that won't eat, can't eat, whatever, it's very tempting to just say, oh, have what you want. We've recently got into a program, I don't know if I'm allowed to mention it, but it's a program we've been watching where people look inside people's baskets and they actually tot up what people are spending on food each week. And they did a mother and daughter, and she was spending £115 a week on food for just the pair of them. The national average is £33 a week. They actually managed to save her £54, but she was obsessed with cooking two meals a night because the little girl wouldn't eat what she ate. So what they did, which was very clever, they got the little girl cooking with her mother and making their favourite foods, but making them from scratch and making them healthier, course, job done. Mum saves £54 a week. Little girl's learning how to cook what she likes and eating it. And they're now eating the same meals, or at least they were for the programme. Whether or not they are now,
and
I don't know.
And healthier as well, by the sound of it.
Much healthier, yeah. For example, pizza, instead of buying the ready-made pizza or sending out for takeaway, splitting pita breads and putting either fresh tomato or a can of tomato on top with a bit of cheese and mushroom or ham, whatever you wanted, and grill it. Perfect. No sluggy pizza base, which can be very, very thick and very, obviously, lots of white flour, lots of white stuff in it.
Yeah.
Much, much healthier option. And the kiddie got to do it herself, so therefore she wanted to eat it because she created it.
Yeah.
So, you know, there is a lot there. It's such an emotive subject. I mean, I could go on for hours.
Well, no, but, I mean, it's all good stuff, but it is, it just seems to me almost a sort of inbred sort of habit that people have developed either themselves individually, but then are they passing on as role models to their children and breaking that cycle. I mean, so many people far more qualified and experienced than I have tried in terms of the education system, in terms of, I mean, I've been thinking about people like Jamie Oliver and stuff, but I mean, you know, celebrities sort of people have tried to do something about it. And, you know, where are we now? No further on.
We're no further on. And that's because I think it is such a vast, there's so many elements to this problem. They're not going to fix it overnight. I welcome the traffic light system, but whether or not it will do what they think it's going to do, I don't know.
So there we go. An interesting discussion there. Thank you very much for that input on that, Kim. Fascinating. And, yeah, the traffic light system, nutritional labelling on food could become mandatory. Would it change your shopping habits? And what about our youngsters here on the island? Quite significantly above the national average for being overweight at a very young age. We need to do something about that. We're going to come back after these with some more chat about goodness only knows what. But do get involved if you want to. The number 01983 240666. This is the Lunchtime Social Debate with me, Andy Knight, Kim and Dave in the studio.
The Lunchtime Social Debate is sponsored by Jobs on the isleofwight.co.uk. If you're looking for work or if you're looking for staff, please call Jobs on the Isle of Wight on 01983 564 880.
Across the Isle of Wight
and across the world,
this is Vectis Radio.
The House of Chili is located at Hollier's Barn in Branston, between Princelet Shoot and Thompson Garden Centre. We stock a vast array of chili-related products from the Isle of Wight. Chili balsamics, relishes, chutneys, marmalades, sweets, snacks, dried mixes, and a vast array of hot sauces from the Isle of Wight and around the world. We have sample tables to taste a wide variety of products. Looking for that unique present? How about a House of Chili gift pack or one of our luxury hampers? Check out www.houseofchili.com. Ideal gifts for the chili lover in your life.
All washed up for a local band playing an upbeat mix of skiffle, blues and bluegrass. Quality music for pubs, parties, events and charities. Last year we played Bestival, this year the Isle of Wight Festival and the Postfest. Great music available at a really reasonable price. Listen to us now, click audio on the Vectis Radio website to find out more about how you can book All Washed Up. Call 01983 521 267. That's 01983 521 267.
Check out the Riverside Centre Carpentry Shop next door to Vectis Radio. Skilled craftsmen have a small shop that's set up to donate to the Riverside charity. The shop contains nest boxes, tables, garden furniture, wooden horses. Practically anything wooden can be made to order. The skilled craftsmen are down to earth and really friendly. So don't be shy. Come and see them here at the Riverside Centre in Newport.
Stay social and get in touch.
Give us a call on 01983 240666
or add us on Skype. It's vectis.radio. The World Wide Web never felt so local.
Wednesday night is all about the latest tunes on Vectis Radio with the new music show. Join me, Kieran Thompson, from 7pm for all the latest tracks, news and music reviews. From the mainstream to the obscure, you may hear something you've never heard before. So tune in to the new music show, Wednesdays from 7, only on Vectis Radio.
The Lunchtime Social Debate is sponsored by Jobs on the isleofwight.co.uk. If you're looking for work or if you're looking for staff, please call Jobs on the Isle of Wight on 01983 564 880.
And it's around a quarter to one now. You're listening to the final quarter of an hour of this, the Lunchtime Social Debate, with me, Andy Knight, and the Baroness and Lord Philby. Kim and Dave are with me in the studio. I just wanted to bring this one up for you guys. I mentioned at the top of this hour that there are plans now for the Isle of Wight to be split into two areas and have Isle of Wight East and Isle of Wight West. And in the 2020 general election, if there isn't one before, We would then be voting for two MPs on the island. I believe that there is a three-month consultation on this Boundary Commission, which is affecting the whole country in various ways, is currently underway and will be running up until the beginning of December. And I think people can make representations directly to the Boundary Commission online to support or oppose these suggestions or proposals one way or t'other. So what do you reckon about that, Dave? Two MPs?
Well, first of all, we're not voting for two MPs. It's the island's being divided into two areas. So we in the West will have one MP to vote for, and wherever the division is, they will have a different MP. So
do we need two MPs, do you think?
I'm divided on this. I think it's overkill. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that we do. I'm very pleased to see that they've done away with the idea of having half an MP on the island and half an MP on bit of the mainland. Yeah. I'm pleased that one died a death.
Yeah.
I suppose if we have two MPs, then island issues might well be able to overlap into each other's areas.
Well,
we might actually get double the influence or double the...
Because I believe the Isle of Wight as an electoral constituency, yep, is one of the largest in the country in terms of the population and the actual physical area. And I suppose the thinking behind it is partly to do with that, maybe all to do with that. I don't know the thinking in terms of splitting the island east and west is the idea, the proposal I've seen. But I think, what you're saying is quite right there. Do you think that having an Isle of Wight West MP, because the issues in the West Wight are different, significantly different to those in the East Wight? I mean, in terms of development and planning and, general sort of elements?
Yeah, quite possibly. I think it certainly would... You do feel that you get forgotten out west, as I'm sure that probably people from the South Ventnor area, mm-hmm, they will tell you they're forgotten, and other areas have their own issues and problems anyway. So in some respects, it's a good idea, and it certainly will give us two bites of the cherry for island issues.
Well, yeah, that's the other thing, is if you've got actual two people waving their order papers in the House of Commons, we've got twice the chance of hearing the island voice raised.
That's right.
I
suppose it could get it depends on the way you look at politics. I mean, you could say that if we have one shade of MP for one half and one another shade for another half, whether that would actually create or hinder the island, that's a different issue, but it's certainly one that's worth thinking about.
Do you think it would? I mean, just thinking along those lines, and everything you say is absolutely right, and we'd need to consider those aspects, but do you think that there is a danger that it might actually be divisive for the island? Because the island as a whole is very much... I mean, we're insular by definition. That's what an island is. But we do have an island identity. And I know that there's always been this east-west sort of kind of semi-serious kind of thing, about people saying, well, they've got steam-driven televisions in the West Wight. And we love that. We don't mind that. But you choose to live where you choose to live. And there is this kind of friendly rivalry between the East and West Wight, which is perfectly healthy and so on. But nevertheless, as an island, as a community, we are very much one. And I think most people tend to sing from the same hymn sheet when we've got island issues. Do you think that having two MPs could prove to be divisive in terms of the community on the island?
Yes, Personally,
yeah.
I do.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Because how do you think that might manifest?
Well,
itself?
I think if we elect two and they both go to Parliament and one gets issues sorted and the other one doesn't, how unfair is that going to be to whoever's left?
Well, what's
behind?
Also interesting, Dave's saying, I mean, you might get two different political parties represented on the island.
Yeah.
Is that going to help us in terms of getting government funding? Because one might be on the front bench and one might be in the opposition.
Know, do you? How that works, it's difficult. It's a difficult call. I can understand the reasonings for it, but I'm not 100% sure it won't cause more problems, really.
Yeah.
But I bow to your better judgment, sir.
Well, I don't like most people, I don't have a definitive answer to it.
No, of course.
And I suppose until we do it, you know, it really is just suck it and see, really,
but
isn't it?
If we do it, can we get out of it?
Well, the boundary
would change again. Yeah,
yeah, they keep changing the boundaries one way and another.
Yes.
They keep tinkering with it. And I'm not sure. I know they want to reduce the number of MPs, which is kind of a bit of a very strange one. That nationwide they want to reduce it down from 653 to 600.
Well, how are they going to do it?
Well, by changing, I mean, Jeremy Corbyn's seat would disappear. His constituency would be merged into another one. And the old Chancellor.
Yeah, George Osborne.
George Osborne,
well.
He would also lose his seat.
But we'd have two to make up for that.
Which doesn't...
That
maybe we'd
even.
Have Jeremy Corbyn and George Osborne.
No, please, thank you. No.
In fact, why we're not keeping one when everybody else is being raised by...
Yeah.
If you're going to lose 53 MPs...
Yeah, that's true.
Then
why are they creating
then the,
more? Yeah.
Then the other areas... must be increasing their numbers, therefore they must be coming towards us, you know, towards our number. I know we are one of the biggest areas.
Well, that's true, yeah. I don't know what the thinking behind this proposal is, I must say, other than the fact that the size of the constituency as it stands, but as you say, they're increasing the sizes of constituencies in as part of this National Boundary Commission reform. So, yeah, it does rather go against the run of play that
it
they're
does. It kind of doesn't. When I heard that, it just didn't make sense. Like, I understood why they were talking about making us have 1.5 MPs with an MP with half a constituency from a bit of Hampshire or wherever.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that one has been put to bed, because once again, you have to say that the island would either be the major part of that person's portfolio or a minimum. It was never going to be half and half.
No.
They were never going to be able to split themselves half and half.
No.
Therefore, we were going to have an area of the island that was going to be under represented. So coming back to the two MPs idea, that's a good progress, but I'm not sure why we actually need two.
I think your point about the fact that it could which we hit on a few minutes ago, that it could dilute the representation of the island as a what we know are a unitary authority, as it were, in terms of a single entity, it could work against us. It could, couldn't it?
I mean, it could. It sounds very good to have. We've got two MPs, and if you're not careful, you say, "Oh, we're voting for two MPs." We're not. We're voting for one particular representative in areas. You know, and as you say, if one colour is different to another colour, and either that they aren't in government or you know they. It's a weak government. Then are we going to have weak island MPs?
I've just read this extra bit here, just having a look at this in terms of the draft proposals which have now been published by the Boundary Commission. Newport would actually be in the West Wight constituency.
Absolutely,
which is surprising in
a
way.
And I think Cowes as well. Did I read?
Let me just think. Yeah, maybe.
I think it's Cowes, sort of Cowes down to... some or all of Newport, and then
on West Cowes, obviously.
But I think it misses out. I think the dividing line goes down to sort of Blackgang area rather than the Ventnor area. So what you think of as being the dividing lines aren't quite.
Well, it's not, because isn't Arrowton part of West Wight? Didn't the police tell us that?
No, it is at the moment under policing.
See, that's weird. Under the police, Arrowton is part of West Wight
because it's rural and because there's. Nothing big in the middle of that.
Well, presumably Newport is in the West Wight in order to justify this proposal for the reform, because without Newport, there simply wouldn't be the population in the West Wight.
Well, I think, but it also then would actually overflow the East Wight. If you think of where people actually live on the island, the majority live on that side, Ventnor, Sandown, Shanklin, Ryde.
Sure.
They're large population areas.
Yes, of course. There's
more so than the rural.
Yes.
Coming from, yeah, absolutely. Basically from a line from Cowes to Ventnor, mm. Newport in the middle, mm-hmm. come that side there, and there's more sheep than people. I'm sorry, did I say that? Sorry, there's more air than people, shall we say.
Well, anyway, whatever our thoughts are on this, the draft proposals have indeed now been published by the Boundary Commission for England, and you can have your say, and you can find the Boundary Commission for England online, of course, and the 12-week consultation period has been launched. I believe it was launched last week, running for, as I say, 12 weeks, so roughly 3 months, and that will run up until December 5th, as I understand it. So it is possible for you to register your pros or cons, support or rejection of these proposals. Presumably the Boundary Commission will take that into account if there's any cogent arguments one way or the other.
Everybody needs to go and do it.
So, yeah, I mean, whatever your views on it, yeah. As always, like we say about elections, you know, yeah. If you don't vote, you haven't really got a voice.
No,
so,
that's right.
You know, make absolutely. Your feelings felt.
Just
and, yeah.
As an aside to that, of mm. course, there's the debate that's going on at the moment as to whether we need a mayor for the southern area.
Oh yes,
that basically is, from what I understand, is New Forest across to Portsmouth, mm-hmm. including us.
Yep.
And whether, you know, it's sort of we could go from sort of having fairly minor representation. Sorry, Andrew, I didn't mean it quite like that. But it's no personal reflection on our MP. But take away suddenly his boundary is going to be two people. Taking place, yeah. And then a mayor as well, which could be an islander.
Yeah.
I mean, it unlikely has got to be the answer. Really, we'd just be tagged on to that southern area. But there's that discussion going on at the moment as to whether we really need to spend more on a mayor for that southern area and what their portfolio will be, what their funding will be, whether that means that there's more funding opportunities for us, because obviously that's a very relative question with the fact that at the moment we're going through, you know, all councils, whether it be national, you know, sort of unitary bodies or whatever they call themselves, to parish level, you know, the funding that we're getting is being, you know, cut and capped, and questions having to be asked, and certainly the Isle of Wight Council is suffering big time, and whether if we get a mayor, whether that will actually help or hinder, even if we then have to fund one from.
Well, no, absolutely. I think a lot of this, though, I mean, in terms of the point you raise about this mayoral question, which is an interesting one as well, but also with this proposed boundary reform and the potential for an East and West MP on the island, all these things are not introducing it as a topic, but a little bit like Brexit. I mean, if we don't get the information, how are you supposed to make an informed decision?
Exactly.
Exactly, you know, which I didn't think we did with Brexit one way or the other, to be fair, but that's a different topic we've talked about. But, you know, in terms of something like this, which could be quite significant in terms of change for the island, both the mayoral question that you've raised sensibly, Dave, and the 2MP proposal, you know, I think we need to have what are the ramifications for, you know, funding and how it would work and who would be this and who would be that and so on and so forth, and how would it trickle down to who would be accountable for this, who would be accountable for that. I mean, we need to know a lot of information, and it needs to be put out now, because if this Boundary Commission, you know, website is taking comments for the next 3 months, it's no good leaving it till next year. We need to know now so that we can make decisions based on information and not just, you know, like you, with respect, you and I just sort of talking about what we think might happen or what we understand might happen.
But then making a comment to the Boundary Commission is only on what limited information we've been given. I've not seen, and maybe it is out there, but I've not seen any of this information being given.
No.
Yet we're being, like Brexit, we're being expected to make a decision on, you know, without complaining about it.
In this instance, we might not be making the decision. The decision will be made.
That's right.
You know, with or without us. But anyway, guys, look, it's been absolutely great to see you as always. So Kim and Dave, the Baroness and Lord Philby, in the studio for the Lunchtime Social Debate with me, Andy Knight. It's been wonderful, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank
absolute
you.
Pleasure.
Super to see you. See you again next week. I shall be back on Friday morning this week for the mid-morning show from 10 o'clock. Coming up after the 1 o'clock news, Kevin Wilson will be here for your afternoon show this Monday. Thanks for tuning in. I've been Andy Knight. This is Vectis Radio. Do take care. Enjoy the rest of your Monday.
This. This is Vectis Radio.